Welcome to SelfDiscoveryWisdom.com, formerly known as Self Discovery Media. On these podcasts, you're going to hear people who speak from the heart. They've taken the journey in life. Many things have happened to them, but they've changed it to happening for them. And in their strength, their courage, they've discovered their abilities and their wisdom, and they are now sharing it here with you. Do enjoy each show. We bring it to you with love and knowing that it's going to help you on your journey of life. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome back to another edition of Nature of Addictions right here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest today is Gina K. And we're going to be talking about alcohol-free sobriety today and how she unalcoholed her life. How did she do that? Alcohol is something that really grafts an awful lot of people, and it can sneak up on you, and you don't realize that you're at the five drinks, the six drinks, and you need a drink every day, and you get stressed and you need a drink, and you get worried and you need a drink, and you know, it can get its clutches in you. She says her path to self-discovery was paved with challenges, leading her to over 5 years of personal sobriety. This journey not only freed her from the clutches of alcohol, but also unveiled her authenticity, illuminating purpose for far greater than she ever envisioned. Today, with experience and passions guiding her, she recognizes the profound significance of sharing this transformative tale. I've got a little tongue-tied today. And sobriety and self-love. That's the key, folks. This message is essential for those navigating those tumultuous waters of addiction, for women looking to reclaim their power post-dependency, and for anyone yearning for a life of true purpose and vitality. From personal tribulations to life brimming with purpose, she aims to inspire, guide, and empower. This is what it's all about, folks. You know, through our own bumps in the road or tumultuous rides or whatever else we wish to call it, it is how does a meaningful purpose come out of that? Because then you are relatable to the people you're serving. You've been there, you've gone through it, and you know what people are going through. And it's so easy to go down that road if you're not aware. Right, Gina? Welcome to the show.
Oh, wow, Sarah. Well, thank you so much for having me. And I just love your podcast, by the way. It inspires me. And I'm like, I need to talk to Sarah because she is an amazing woman. She has so much wisdom. And it's an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much.
Right back at you, darling. Right back at you. You know, alcoholism is, you know, people like to judge it. People like to, that would never be me. But, and, you know, of course, today, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, or whether it's chocolate or coffee or wrong relationships, you know, those addictions come into place. But for you, it was alcohol. Tell us your journey of how, you know, you kind of became, you know, troubled by alcohol when you realized that it was consuming your life.
Absolutely. Wow. So it all started from my childhood, as they always say, hey, how was your childhood, whenever you have like a counseling sessions or this. But it really truly is. And I didn't discover that until I was about 22 years old. But yes, I was sexually molested when I was between the ages of 6 to 12 years old by a trusted man. We thought so anyway. But yes. And so I had bottled that up inside for so many years. And so, of course, I got into bad relationships in high school and started doing drugs in my senior year of high school. But it really wasn't, I didn't really start drinking until I turned 22. And that's because I had some friends that were already 21 and they were drinking. So I'm like, well, I should just try it out. And then I got into the lifestyle of partying. You know, I would go to clubs, drink, and party more, drink, and party more, drink. And that's eventually how I met my DJ first husband, who is ex-husband now. Yes, I met him and we fell in love because obviously I was into that music. It was all house music, dance music. I love that music still. Don't get me wrong. I still love that music.
It's not the music.
It's not the music. I love that music. But, and he and I, you know, we were just drinking all the time together. That's what we did, you know? And so we weren't ever really, I didn't know what it was like to even make love to him sober. Isn't that so sad? That is very, very sad thinking about that. But we do, we had a beautiful child though. I am so blessed to have him. Now he's 15 years old and is an amazing son. I love him so much, and he's just an incredible, incredible boy. But in the midst of my alcohol drinking during that marriage, I was very started becoming very abusive. I started getting picking fights with him, saying that he was cheating on me, even though he wasn't. And I was just all these ideas and thoughts were coming to my head, and I knew it was from the enemy because those were not my thoughts. I was being fed that, but I didn't understand that. I'm like, I don't know what this is. I thought everyone had evil. Well, I guess some people, I guess everyone does have those thoughts, but not to
Yeah.
where it's telling me to do certain things to, throw out his clothes outside of the balcony, because he's cheating on you and all these things. And I believed it all because I wasn't in my right state of mind. And he had enough. He said, I'm not coming home. Me and, our son, we're not coming home. We're going to be staying at my mother's house, and we just cannot because your behavior is too erratic. And you know what? I don't blame him for leaving. And so I was very miserable. This is the first time I actually felt empty, depressed, and suicidal, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I remember laying in my bed, nobody was there. I shut down all the windows, closed all the curtains and everything, and was just drinking and watching TV, just drinking, drinking. So, and I didn't want to wake up. It wasn't until one of my friends, he was a dear friend for still a dear friend to me to this day. He was texting me, said, "Hey, I just want to check in and see how you're doing." I said, "Oh, I'm just going to take this bottle of Ativan that I have here, and I'm going to drink alcohol because there's nothing for me to live anymore or live for anymore." He took that seriously, and thank goodness he did, because immediately, well, I don't know, I was already passed out. I woke up slightly, dazed, actually very dazed. And then ambulance had come into my household, took me out and got me to the hospital, and they pumped my stomach. I was vomiting because they had thought I had overdosed, which
Right.
I think I was trying to really kill myself.
Yes.
And so I was already going through what was called an outpatient program for anxiety, because I was, of course, experiencing anxiety during the times that I was drinking. Here we think that drinking helps with anxiety, but in all actuality, it makes it way worse,
Right.
way worse.
Really aggravates it.
Yes. And so I remember the doctor who told me to go to this outpatient program. He was there and he was like, "I'm so glad you're alive." I said, "Oh, thank you." Was kind of out of it. I immediately went to a inpatient program, which I stayed there for 3 days, and that was a very interesting experience. And I connected with some people, and I was grateful that I had a roommate, and we were sharing stories. Her story was different from mine, but it was nice to have somebody to talk to. After I left there, I went into the outpatient program, where then I was learning like coping techniques about anxiety, how to cope with your depression, all these things. But not once thinking about me having an alcohol problem. I was just thinking I had anxiety. And when it wasn't until one counselor came up to me, he was like, "I noticed in the past on in the questionnaire, you did say that you drank. Are you still drinking?" I said, "No." I totally lied to her. I was like, "No, I'm not drinking anymore." But I really was. I was really drinking a fifth of vodka almost every day. And so what happened is after that, I thought I can go ahead and live my life by myself, trying to exercise, walk the lake, yet had a bottle of, not water, it was vodka with me. Trying to make myself healthy, not admitting that I actually had a problem. I just thought I had a high tolerance. It wasn't until 2014, Thanksgiving, which we're almost in Thanksgiving now, thinking about like, oh my goodness. My mom picked me up and she had my son Dominic with me. And she said that we're going to go to my brother's house for Thanksgiving. I'm like, okay. I didn't have any alcohol with me at all because it's my mom. She didn't really know about my problem until later on. She didn't know the severity of it anyway. So I go there, but I'm all shaky, sweaty, nauseous, clammy. Like, oh, I feel so sick. I feel so sick. Mom, please, can you please give me some alcohol? Because I don't feel good right now. She's like, "No, I'm not going to give you alcohol." I said, "Mom, it's a matter of life or death right now, please." So she, bless her heart, she brings me like 4 ounces of red wine. And then I was like, "Oh no, mother, I need to drink the whole bottle." And she was like, and that was the moment that I actually admitted that I was an alcoholic because I needed it in order for me to actually function. And so in December, I drove myself to rehab drunk, but I can still drive because I needed to drink in order to drive. It was several hours away from my home up north in Northern California. And I got there and I got stayed sober for 30 days, made wonderful connections with the people there. But what did I do after I left rehab? I went straight to the casino because it was right there about 10 minutes away and I was drinking. So because I thought in my mind that I can go ahead and be okay after I drink these drinks here and I will go back to sobriety. It was not the case. I started drinking again. And I then hooked up with one of my, it was a college fling. He and I had a friendship relationship, but then we got intimate when obviously I was been drinking. And so I got pregnant. So I was like, okay, well, let's try to make it work. You know, I'm pregnant. So we tried to move in together. And of course, during my pregnancy, I was sober. But after I gave birth, and that was a traumatic experience because I almost died, baby almost died. He had hypoxia and I was hemorrhaging. And that's another story. But he's okay now. He's such a blessing, beautiful blessing. He just turned 8 years old in October. And so we moved in together and baby was growing up, weaned off my breast, and then he started just drinking the bottle, baby bottle. But when he went on his bottle, I got onto my alcohol bottle and I was drinking again and I relapsed. Those behaviors of violence came out again. And this time I felt like, okay, it was way worse than how it used to be. And things were just not making sense anymore. Everything was just weird to me. It didn't feel like reality. I felt like I was being pulled into hell, literally. I really felt demons around me this time. And even my partner at the time, he was like, your face even changed. It's like he saw something and I felt something and I knew something. I would hear weird growls. I mean, there was some like demonic stuff going on for sure. I've experienced that. And so what happened one day is before I went to work, I would go to a liquor store. This would be my routine. Pour out some Coca-Cola, pour in vodka in there and mix it and take it to work. But I remember it was raining one day and I was in the parking lot of the liquor store and I was so sick to my stomach. I was vomiting in the bags that I had kept behind in case I did get sick. And I was like, Lord, God, whatever you are, you know, I said, if please, I do not want to live like this. I really called out and said, please help me. Not only did this 2 weeks later, I had severe pain around my abdomen all the way around. And I thought it was like maybe really bad menstrual cramps, but I couldn't keep anything down. Everything was coming out. I was weak. I couldn't move. It was too painful. So I had asked my youngest son's father if he could take me to the hospital. Now, he took me to a faith-based hospital, which was really neat because I felt at home there, like I belong there. I was like, oh, this is fantastic, you know. They detoxed me. But what I remember most is when the doctor came up to me and she had this beautiful necklace on with a little cross there. And then I kept on staring at that necklace and she was like, you need to stop drinking. You're going to die within 10 years if you continue drinking this way. So promise me, cross your heart that you'll stop drinking. I'm like, I crossed my heart, you know, not knowing what anything he meant. I said, and then from there on, you know, I had no visitors visit me at the hospital. I was there for like almost a week. I really went inside and had to search, who am I? What is my purpose? Why am I here? What can I do to change to make my life better? Not only for myself, but for my family that love me. And so from when I left the hospital, I went home. There was vodka there waiting for me, but I poured it out, threw it through the bottle in the garbage that was outside, the garbage bin that was outside, waiting for the garbage man to come. And I wanted to change my life. So I was already kind of dabbling into church a little bit here and there. And I was like, oh, well, let me go back to church and see. You know, I didn't have any of my children at the time. My mom was taking care of one of them, plus with the dad too, you know, would pick him up once in a while. And then the father of my youngest was taking care of that because we agreed that I wouldn't really be in contact with them until I got sober and took care of myself. So I had no kids. Just myself. This was the first time I think I've ever lived with myself besides living with my mom. And so I started going and serving and meeting these wonderful women. I was going to like Bible study. I was doing children's ministry. Then I went to do street ministry, which I was serving the homeless. And it was a wonderful experience just to be around people that loved God. So it was just a transformative experience for me. And I'm like, okay, what's next? I went to start working out at 5 a.m. every day, to get my body better and back in shape and started feeling good to be around those motivating people that, like, yeah, working out is great. Then I'm like, okay, what's next? I needed to find a mindset coach. I needed to figure out what the heck is in my mind. What is really drawing me to drink alcohol? What is going on? So she helped me tremendously. She's not only a fitness trainer, she was a mindset coach. So she was helping me with my body and my mind. And I was getting the spirit and my soul filled with church and then the people at the church. Then I just took on those practices. I was practicing every day how to live better. I was building a morning routine. I was just hanging around with people that I wanted to be like. Like, I was so inspired by so and so. I want to hang out with them. And then I just started really like going within and then connecting with my spirit. And then I'm just discovering so much more. I met my husband through street ministry. I've been married since the end of 2019, but we had our wedding in February 2020. He has a son who I met before I actually met my husband. He was in children's ministry and I was actually serving the children's ministry. And he's only 1 year older than my youngest son. So now we have a beautiful family and we're all together, not all the time, because of course they have to go to the other parent. But we're happy, and he's a godly man, and I'm a godly woman now. And I really felt that surrendering was the biggest thing that changed my life. I had to surrender and say, I can't do it alone. So
Yes.
that is my story.
But you know what all the way through this, I feel nobody has addressed the root cause of the problem. It was the abuse, the sexual abuse that you went through as a child. At
Right.
any point did somebody click to that as why do people harm themselves? Because somewhere inside of them, there is a self-loathing for what has happened to them, feeling it was their fault, they must have asked for it, they must have deserved it, because nobody stopped it. Nobody stopped it when it was going on. And so, therefore, you think, well, this must be my punishment for something without even knowing, right? So, anywhere along the line, did any of the people that you went to ever address the cause of the problem?
That is, I'm so glad you have. So yes, remember I was keeping that all inside, and I remember I was really acting out, and my mom noticed that she's not right. This was when I was about 22 years old. She had a family intervention, brought all my siblings in. I always felt like I was a black sheep of the family because I was so different from everybody else in my family. And my mom came to me, and we had a family intervention. I was feeling like everyone was pointing the finger at me. Why this? Why this? Why this? And finally came out. The reason why I'm like this is because I was sexually abused when I was 6 years old from the time I was 12 by this person. And then everyone just quiet. And then, but the thing is that my mom, she's like, questioned me about a certain birthmark or whatever near that area close to his genital. And I was like, what? Didn't you believe me after I've been saying, I finally was able to pour my heart, just tell, because it's been stuck in there. And then once I did tell her, yes. And then she's like, well, do you want me to go ahead and find him and, charge him? I said, no, mom. I said, please. It was very difficult for me just to even get that out.
And the unfortunate thing is, had it been addressed at the time, the charges could have been brought. But for you now to face him and prosecute him, you would have to go through it all over again emotionally, right? And you're like, yes, some people are strong enough to do that, but at the same time, you were fighting your alcoholism, trying to get your life in order. Is this something that you needed? But also at the back of your mind is always, but he got away with it. Right. So there's still those conflicting things. And so it doesn't matter what verbiage is said to the face, it's the dialogue that's going on in the heart and the soul and the head. Right. So do you ever feel that you could walk away from that? It's happened to you, but it doesn't have to define you. Do you feel you have walked away from that abuse and its clutches?
100%. I had to forgive and I had to learn, you know what? That is my past. And what happened in my past has shaped me to become the woman who I am today.
And that's the thing, is that stuff's going to happen to us. And to some people, it's It's heavier than others. But each one of us, it's like, how much can we carry until we can't carry it anymore? And what is going to be reaction of that weight? And if that weight isn't shared, that's when it becomes consuming and starts breaking a person down. And for you, it, went into looking at love and through the wrong lenses, right? And looking at the numbing of not dealing with it, not even knowing what you're not dealing with, through the alcohol, because it's easier. The person you thought you were when you were drinking was a person that thought she was in control. Little did
Absolutely.
you know that you were unraveling and becoming out of control, but you thought you were in control. So that's the reason why the bottle was your friend.
Absolutely. And I had very low self-esteem, low confidence. I hated myself. I hated how I looked. I hated that I wasn't like the most popular girl in school. I didn't like that. And so I felt that the bottle, the alcohol, helped me with my confidence. Which, what was interesting is that here I thought I was getting more confident because of the alcohol. I was gaining more weight. And I didn't even notice how I look because I numb myself. And so we have this total different like perception of ourselves when we're drinking. We're looking in the mirror, we see this hot person. But then I saw a photo of myself someone had taken, and I was like, what if that's me? And then I weighed myself and it was like 20 pounds heavier. But I didn't really feel it. I because it numbed me. And and then I was like, ooh, this is not good.
Yeah,
This
and
is horrible.
it's not a healthy weight because it's a bloating weight. It's
Oh,
not
no.
like a food weight. It's that basically all of your organs kind of being inflamed because of the alcohol, right? So,
Absolutely.
going retaliation, stop what you're doing. A lot of people turn to something, whether it be alcohol or anything else, because they're trying to escape something. And we can run as fast as we like. We can never outrun ourselves. We're always going to have to face ourselves somewhere along the line. When you did finally face that, for you, you're in rehab here, and you're rehab having a rehab right by a casino, and them not, taking you physically somewhere completely different. I've interviewed another beautiful young woman many years ago. She was a friend of my daughter's, and it was alcohol and drugs for her as escapism. And she said when she kind of ended up on the street, and it was a question of selling herself for a drug, then she finally woke up and like, no, that's crossing the line. But whenever she went for the detoxing, she would go to the detoxing and right back out, for the drug or the drink. And until one time it was, no, now take me to rehab. I'm now willing to do the work. So it always gets to something, doesn't it? That something where I just can't do this anymore. And I'm looking for answers. I'm looking for answers of why am I doing it? How do I stop it? So would you say it was the shiny cross? Was that your epiphany moment that kind of like God's calling?
Yeah, so it was definitely that, but even before that, it was 2013 that I started going to church. With that, my ex-husband and my mom was there because her coworker invited her, and so she invited me. So we're like, okay, let's go. But immediately when I walked in there, just by them singing, I was crying. Like something came over me. Like something was like, like the if you want to call it the Holy Spirit. But I felt something overcome me, and I was like weeping like a little girl. That little girl was just letting
The
go,
little
kind of.
girl
And
that
that
had
was.
never been heard, a little girl that was never believed, the little girl that felt less than, or that she was being punished for something, and that nobody came to her rescue, right? She had to be released.
And that's what it was, and that's what happened, and then that shiny cross, and then me just feeling just different. Like I felt like someone's next to something's with me. Something's with me in this process. But the thing is that they always have been. I say they because I love like little spirit angels, guides, whatever, God. And I always say like, but they were not there because I wasn't there.
Well, you were
I mean,
shutting them out.
I don't feel like they were.
Yeah, you shut
Exactly,
them up, right?
exactly.
How could they get
I
through
was
the
shocked.
alcohol stupor, right? How could they reach
Right,
you? Because
right.
you had just said no entry, right? I'm in escape land.
Exactly. That is
You're like, la 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 la.
exactly. It's like, oh, I don't want to hear you. No. Yeah, you're
But
right.
you went through,
Yeah.
the 9 months of pregnancy without the drink. How did you cope with that? Were the cravings? Did you go into chocolate? Did your addiction take you somewhere else?
Oh, definitely chocolate. I started going towards sugar.
Yes. Yes. I mean, chocolate's such a
Which,
comforter on so many levels. Yes.
yes. And I mean, that habit hasn't, I've slowed down on the chocolates, but I always love the sugar taste, especially after drinking. After I stopped drinking, I was like, sugar, because my body was used of all that sugar. And it was,
Yes.
it's a, weaning off sugar was very difficult as well. But now I can control the, the no sugar, but it makes me think about when I was pregnant, my last month of pregnancy, I had gestational diabetes. It's probably because I was having all of that
Yes.
sugar.
Yes. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And well, as you said, people don't realize in alcohol how much sugar is actually in there, because it's liquid, it gets in there a lot easier. Right?
Totally.
And that causes that bloating and that weight cause and everything else. So, your body was trying to tell you everything. And even though you had, come out to the family and told them what had happened, like, no, I don't want to find them and prosecute. I don't want to go down that path. But was it ever spoken about again? Or was it like, no, we'll put it to rest. We're not going to talk about it. You're going to get on with your life. Because that wasn't facing it. That wasn't dealing with it, right?
Right. Yeah. So no one's talked about it ever since to this day.
Wow.
So what's interesting is I hope my mom listens to my podcasts when I do speak, because I speak a lot about it there, about what happened, this, that. And maybe she has, because there's been some times where I haven't heard from her, and normally she's
She's
contacting
busy
me.
digesting. Yeah, I mean, as a
You
parent, when
know.
something happens to our children, we always say, why didn't I see the signs? Or, why wasn't I there for them? Or, the suffering that your kids go through, you take on to yourself. So maybe she's actually going through something herself of how come I didn't see this and how come I didn't prevent it, and she needs to do her own journey of healing there, right? Or even something together, because
Exactly.
as a parent, it's always we'd never want our children to go through suffering, and when they do and we didn't see it,
Right.
or we were even instruments of it in some form or way, it's the reason why they don't talk is that the guilt and the shame kind of takes over. So it needs to be talked about at some point, Mum. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, you found a journey, through the surrendering to God, surrendering to the church, but I think it was surrendering to the higher elevation of love. And in a true church of loving God. Not the dictator God that tells you're a sinner, you're this or you're that, or
Yes.
I'm not interested in your kind of God. God is love, right?
Right.
And when you're in that church of, or in the presence of God is love, that unconditional love, right? It has such a harmony to it, right? That is something that you can't really always put into words, but the feeling is so transcending.
Yes. You know what's so neat is that I got like goosebumps on the top of my head while you were talking to me about that. I was like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wonder if my hair stand up at the same time too. But it is so true. And that's what it is. You know, the church, you know, everybody, so the whole church thing was very confusing to me. And I really went there for like the fellowship,
Yes.
the because I knew they love God. And that's what I really went there for. Because, you know, and I can always talk about different things too. The Bible is written by man, you know.
Yes,
I'm sure
exactly.
it's been, and there's things that are probably missing there that is not said in there, because only man, the man want whatever they want us to know, and information's left out.
Yeah, it became a
So
form of control rather than truth, right? Yeah.
Yes. And so that's why I've been like searching within,
Yes.
you know, because it says the
That's where
kingdom of
God
God is
is.
within you. And
Yes. Yes.
yes. Okay, this is gonna sound funny, but we are part of God. Like God is a
Absolutely.
frequency, and like you're
Particles.
he's the conductor of this orchestra that is
Yes.
happening.
Yes.
You know, and so it's us. We are the
Yeah.
unconditional love is us.
Yeah. And that's something that, I think gets mislaid. And yes, as you said, it was the camaraderie. It was the presence of people in that state of love that brought you back to igniting the love within you, igniting the God within you. That's always there. But you'd numbed it for so long, you couldn't hear it, you couldn't feel it. And it isn't the words that are spoken, it's the feeling that it ignites, that becomes the words, right? So I think this is unto your own God be true. And that if you don't always agree with the way the church represents, that's okay. It's have your own relationship with God, universe, spirit, energy, whatever you want to call it. But it is, we are all made of the same things, and it's a loving frequency and vibration. And when we allow it to ignite inside of us, it opens us up. You can literally feel your chest and everything opening up. And you see things through a far more compassionate eye, right? Far more through a loving eye of, somebody sees you were broken, the homeless. Somebody sees you as a loser and just lazy. I see you as a human being that needs a helping hand. That's true
Oh,
love.
I love that. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I loved having the conversations with the homeless, because I don't see them any less than me. It's just we're the same. It's just like how I was, went on the wrong path and had to learn, they're going through their journey as well. Everybody's journey and path is different.
And what is it,
It's just
that we
coming.
need on this journey is that we need to know somebody sees us, that somebody cares enough to hear us. And, somebody has the compassion to understand it's not where we want to be, but we just lost and need to find our way. And that is found through other people just saying, I'm there for you.
Yes, because I realized that a lot of when we were doing street ministry, I realized that no one talks to them. So it wasn't just about sharing the gospel, it was really having a conversation as a human being, like human being to human being. Let's talk. Let me see, how is your day going today? And obviously they're like, one time I had asked that question. He's all, what do you think? Because he was out in the streets. Okay, I said, okay, wrong question, so
There's a couple of people
it
I've
was a fun
interviewed
experience, so, and
that work with the homeless, and one of them actually would buy signs. I'm hungry, I need this and that. He said, I'll pay you for your sign, right? Because he wanted to do a transaction, give them a sense of dignity. And then he collected all those signs, and they had a wonderful display of all the signs. And actually, they made a documentary of the work that he was doing because it was so liberating. And for him, it was just, this is my way. And then, another guy who, got to know them by sitting down having coffee, and the homeless people don't let everybody in because they don't trust everyone. And so
that is very
he
true.
was let in, and then not only has he written books with their stories, right, being the author of their stories, but he writes a blog every day about, I met Joe today and this is what he was doing, and he gives them visibility. And I think this is the one thing that when you're homeless, or whether you're going through addiction or you're going through struggle, you feel invisible. You feel nobody sees me. Nobody can hear me. How come they can't see what I'm going through? Right? So it's for someone to turn to the bottle or turn to someone else, it is because they feel so alone.
Exactly. And that's how I felt as well, not being able to speak my truth of what had happened to me as a child. And it wasn't just him. I was sexually abused by a couple incidents by two different people as well. And so just letting me actually just come out, I finally felt like I was heard, that okay, I was here. But then, having to go through what I went through and then learn, see, meeting people who have gone through the same thing made me have more comfort, because I'm like, okay, I don't feel alone because they have gone through it as well. And so there was some commonality where then our conversations were good. And this is happening actually in outpatient programming. I would just be connecting with those people who have gone through the same thing.
What path has it led you down now? What are you
Oh
doing
my
now?
goodness. Oh, I'm so grateful. Let's just say that I have immense gratitude towards God and just the people that have mentored me and supported me throughout my journey. So after my marriage, COVID happened, and so we were at home, which was nice because, well, his parents were with us because they actually came to our wedding because they're from India. And so our wedding was in February, and they were just going to stay a month, but then in March we were shut down. So
Right.
I was a newlywed with my in-laws
Can't
for
quite chase
months.
each other around the apartment naked, right?
Had a two-bedroom apartment, right. So it was interesting and very fun. Because there was a language barrier. They didn't speak English. I didn't speak a Tamil. And what was interesting is that, but it gave me an opportunity to start learning like different passions that I love doing. Like I learned that I love doing makeup. I didn't know I liked doing makeup. I never really did makeup like so much, but I started practicing and practicing. Then I started working out at home more. Then I started like reading books, and I started, which mostly was the Bible actually. And then we started doing like family prayer, because we were together at home. It was nice, but it led me to then connecting with some other church friends who then helped me start this network marketing business into selling health products. So that's what I was doing. Because I'm like, I'm all about health. I love to be healthy. And I'm especially after drinking, you want to get your body back. Well, not back, but yeah, actually back to how it used to be when you
Rescue
were a child.
the organs,
Exactly. So I was taking like a
yes.
lot of minerals and supplements and vitamins, feeling better and better. But then my mentor there taught me a lot about like social media, because I was going to take off my Facebook. I was going to get rid of my Instagram. I was going to get rid of all of the social media. But he's like, no, this is how you can do your business. I said, what? So he showed us that. And I started like having fun with these TikTok and reels and all these things. And that was so much fun. And then it wasn't until I was at a Bible study group for women, and I met this lady, and I just wanted the women to pray for me for my health business, right, at the time. And so, but the lady talked to me. So, hey, there's this person, and she has a Facebook group, and she's talking, and she helps a lot of female entrepreneurs. And I'm like, oh, really? So, yeah, let me see your phone. I'll go ahead and add you. I'm like, okay, cool. But then I started attending her master classes that she would conduct on her Facebook group, business and this and that. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is something that I feel aligned to. I was like, oh, she's, and I loved her. Her name is Rebecca Cafiero. I was like, oh, I love her. She's so awesome. And then I actually got on a call with one of the ladies that was working there, and I was just talking about my goals. And I told her, I'm newly married and I have children, but I feel like I'm being pulled to do different things. I feel like, okay, I have my massage business still. I am a mom, and I enjoy cooking and cleaning. To be honest, cleaning not so much, but the cooking I love.
Yes.
I do the cleaning anyway because it has to be clean because of the
Exactly.
hygienics and everything.
Looking
But
forward to that robotic that can do that,
yes.
right?
Ew, yes, please. And so I was like, I don't know what to do. She's like, well, what have you done in the past? I said, well, I was a weight loss consultant working for Jenny Craig before. I am a massage therapist at the Four Seasons, but we're closed now. And I also have my network marketing business. So, but I said, but I was mostly drunk back in my day. So I
Right.
really didn't have like any passions or anything. It was just the alcohol. So, well, are you sober now? I said, well, yeah. So, well, how long? I'm like, well, 5 years almost. At that time, it was almost 5 years. Now it's six. And then she said, well, have you ever considered like becoming a recovery coach or someone helping other women in the process that you've gone through? I'm like, light bulb, light bulb, light
Yeah.
bulb, cold chill, cold, cold chill, cold chill, everything. And I was like, oh, wow. And so I actually attended her master class, and there was an assignment to share about being vulnerable and telling our story. So what I did is I went on the video. I shared like a 2 minute of my story, and then I posted up there, which that video led me to actually getting a scholarship to be on that year program, which
Wow.
co normally cost like at the time was like almost $10,000, and I knew I couldn't afford that at the time. I'm like, what a gift from God, or source, whatever you want to call it. What a gift. And so I really took advantage of those classes, and I was like learning, 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 learning. I'm doing everything. And then I actually just had launched my business. It'll be almost a year last December last year to my own business, which is I'm a women's alcohol-free recovery Sobriety coach. So I'm excited about that. And I just love helping people. And a lot of the women are struggling. Many men do struggle, but there are a lot of women who are quiet about it and who are struggling with addiction. And what also led me to doing my podcast is through that program as well. And I started like learning things on my own. I never used the computer because I was a massage therapist. I just used my phone for my emails and, the search engine and everything. Never use it. So I actually had to unlearn a lot and I relearned so much more. And the more that I know now is the more that I know that I don't know.
Yes,
There's so much
that
out
life is
there.
constant learning. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, so I was able to build my own website. I was able to do my own podcast, do my own editing, do all these things that I never computer graph. I'm like, what the heck? Where is this coming from? So I'm feeling like I'm being divinely led, which is a wonderful, beautiful experience. So that's where I'm at now, as I am just going within myself, and I'm so happy. Like, if people call me names, it doesn't even faze me anymore. I just laugh at it. Like, I'm not moved, or I'm not like shooken in that way anymore. I used to be. Don't get me wrong. Okay, I had some anger issues, but I can let that all go now. Like, I'm a completely different person, and it's so beautiful, and I'm so grateful.
Well, it's the journey, I with the podcast thing, I was asked to be on another network, and it was a live one. And through the live, people not there, people disappearing, people not turning up, all of that, and you learn to navigate. And she did the editing at that side of it, and then I decided to start my own. And it's like, okay, what do I do now? Right? So, and it's all if the passion is there, the conviction is there, the learning comes. Right. And you realize, I didn't know I had this in me. I didn't know I was capable of this. And I think this is because society sells us short. There's the other side of social media. You've got to be this, you've got to be that. Otherwise, no one's going to like you. And that's part of the problem because it breaks down people's self-worth. It destroys them of ever in their own self-discovery, of their own awesomeness, their own flawsomeness. Right. So if we have to look at social media as being a great gift. If it's in the right vibration, if it's been, it's an algorithm, folks. So what you feed is what you're going to get back. So if you're getting doo-dah back, it means you're putting doo-dah out there, right? So,
Yes.
and it's a place of incredible wisdom and support if you are in that algorithm. But that also means we're an algorithm, right? And so what we feed is what's going to grow. And if you say, I can't, or I shouldn't, or, why would I? Well, I haven't got the credentials, or this, or that, then no, you won't go anywhere. But if you go, I don't know if I can do that, and I'm not going to know unless I try, unless I explore it. So you've gone down the whole gamut of things. You've done this, and you've done that, and you've done this, and done that. But everything that you've done is giving you the experience to apply what you're really meant to be doing and what you're doing now.
Yes, and I think I am a big advocate for taking action. You
Yes.
must take action because it could be books that you read and it becomes self-help, but it really is applying. And if you mess up, so what? We got to take messy action. That's
Yes,
part of
yes. Messing up just
the
means
process,
that doesn't work. It just try something else. I will say with these shows,
fun.
listen, learn, apply. Right? That's what
Oh,
we're
I
here
love that. Yeah.
for. Listen, learn, apply. There's something in every show that you listen to that go, oh, I can do that. Apply it to your life.
Yes.
That's the reason why we do them, is to give that wisdom, that knowledge, those
Right.
skills out there that you can apply to your own life. It's not just a wasted hour of chat. It's about content that you can apply. And it doesn't matter if it's just a smidgen of it or if you take a whole chunk, right? Whatever you're ready for. But that's the point. Everything you did and the whole journey that you've made have been your building blocks. And so now in the work that you're doing, you're not only relatable because you've been that drunk. You know what it cost you. It cost you
Oh,
your
yeah.
first marriage. It cost you, your son at the time. You've been down that road where the abuse, nobody heard you, nobody listened to you, and maybe nobody cared. You've been down that, trying this recovery and that recovery and this and that. But all the things that didn't work, there were things that did. And the things that did have been the building blocks of what to do now. And that's the beauty of it. You didn't give up and you didn't give in. That's the importance.
Yes, perseverance is just the big key. Patience too, and
Yes.
persistence. You know, just try. When people say, "Oh, I'm gonna relapse," you know, it is part of the process, and give yourself some grace. You're on the right path when you are having awareness of it, and that you want to move forward in life and you want to get better. If you have that in you, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time and when and taking those action steps, though. You got to
Yeah,
put into
one step at
action.
a time.
One step
One
at a
step at
time,
a time.
yes.
You're right. And like, you know,
Baby
yeah,
steps.
we trip over our own feet sometimes. All right. Don't beat yourself up and start feeling guilty and oh, it's all fake. No, you tripped. Pick yourself back up. Look at your feet, realign them, and keep walking.
Right, because we're human beings here on Earth experiencing the human experience, and we're going
Yes.
to have different emotions. We're going to have our ups and downs. But just knowing that, hey, you know what? My spirit is strong and I'm going to be okay going through this. And I always tell people, think about the last time you had something traumatic happen where you felt like it was like the end of the world. I said, didn't you get through it?
Yeah.
They're like, well, yeah. I said, well, what makes you think you're not going to get through it? You
Did
know,
the
this, you know,
world
your
collapse?
spirit is so resilient.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we can get through it. We are strong. It's just having that confidence and loving yourself and just start trusting your higher power
But
and
having
just.
somebody in your corner, having somebody like yourself, I hear you. I'm here for you. I understand what it is you're going through. And I understand it's a journey. But you're not alone on that journey. Not only is God within you, but I'm here for you too, right? And that I think that's what people are scared of. It's not the question of, you know, how do I do it? I know I've got to do it, but it's like, who's there to catch me if I fall?
Right. And I think that's why it's very important to surround yourself with people that you want to become. I
Yeah.
always hear, like, if you're in a room of like five people and you're the smartest one in the room, unless you're like a mentor or professor or something, then you're in the wrong room. You want to be in a room
Yes.
where people are, you can grow. Go where you grow.
Yes. Well, best teachers are those that learn from their students, right? Because there is always something to learn. You know, there's always it's this is, you know, what I say with podcasts, have podcast parties where you listen to the podcast, take notes, and then share your perspective, your view on it. And you will find four different people will have four different views. But what have
Oh,
you done?
absolutely.
You've expanded on the knowledge, right? Be willing to listen to somebody else's perception.
Yes, I love that because it's true. If you're in a college classroom and you know the professor is teaching something, everybody's going to hear it or learns
Yeah.
differently,
Yes.
you know, and that's what's so beautiful about about humans is that we're all different.
Right.
We all have different skills. We have different gifts, and when we can help each use those skills when we're serving and helping each other out, I think it's just a beautiful thing. I just, if we have inner peace, if everybody here in the world had inner peace, we would have peace on earth.
Well, I mean, we are the peace we seek. We are the love we seek. And though, although I've just interviewed a gentleman from Israel and where it is talking about love, and that love is the answer, and the love lies within. It is in our soul, it's in our heart, it's in our spirit. It doesn't matter what the religion is, it's about love. And when you've got people hating on each other and annihilating each other, that's coming from a place of pain, of anguish, of greed, of insecurity. And if everybody looks at those things that we have with inside of us and go, how do I address these so they do not become hateful? Because hate is not creative. Hate is only destructive. Love, on the other hand, has a creativity to it that is unstoppable and has absolutely no limits.
Right. And the intention, like for me, my intention's pretty good. You know, don't trust me. I still have emotions where I get angry.
Yes.
I get sad. And that's okay. You know, it's how I respond to that anger now. Like
Yeah.
before I would respond by hitting the wall or, you know, or just getting so angry. But now I would say, you know what? I'm gonna go ahead and take a walk.
Yeah.
Let me just, you know, just breathe the fresh air. You just hike for, I love hiking. I love nature, by the way. It's so beautiful. And if I feel like it's too much for me, I will really go, literally go hiking.
Yeah, no, that's your release.
Yes, it's my release.
Funny,
Exactly.
my shows often come in themes, and like last week was and unintentional themes, but all of it last week was like, what is your quote 10% of pain or suffering or anger that always goes with you, right? But the other 90% is empowered to look at it and go, okay, anger, why are you angry? Let's deal with the situation. Why are you in pain? Let's heal the pain. And not letting the 10% become the 90.
Right. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Because that's when you go back in the bottle.
Trust me. Yes. And you don't want to go backwards.
No.
It's only forward.
We are moving into Christmas. And I know this is a hard time for many people who have, are recovering alcoholics. So I don't know, are they ever recovered alcoholics? Because they always refer to it as recovering, and it's like I never quite get that. Do you at some point say, I could be around alcohol, it is not part of my life. Even if I had a drink, that doesn't make me an alcoholic, right? Because I'm in control of my own life. But for people that are about to go into this festive season, and you've got people have a drink, or everybody else is now sloshed, and you're sober, what? Everybody wants to get into the happy space. And let's face it, an alcoholic happy space is different to a loving vibration happy space. So, what would be your advice for people who are going through, the alcoholism journey right now of what to do to be part of the fun, but not let the fun put a glass in their hand?
I know, right? It is a hard time, even for people who are not drinking, who just feel like alone, it's a difficult time. There's always a couple of things you can do. Well, first and foremost, but think about this. Alcohol is the only substance that if you're not partaking in, they ask you, why not? Why aren't you? Like, why? But if you do methamphamine or this, no, then I was like, oh,
Exactly.
So I always say, if you are comfortable to go to these parties and you have like that comes like I for me personally, this is my experience, I can go to these parties and have no problem. But in the early phases of my recovery, I couldn't. So what would I do? I would have my own party at home and bring my sober friends over and we would celebrate together. We'll
Exactly.
make mocktails if we want,
Yeah.
if they're it, we just have fun, play board games, and we
Right.
just have fun to share stories, laugh, play music, dance, whatever, cook, eat.
Yes. There's plenty of
But if
other
you are at a
pleasures, right?
party,
Yeah.
yes, totally. And if you are at a party and people are starting to drink too much, where they're feeling like, oh, they're acting a little bit strange, leave.
Yeah.
It's Cinderella story. Leave before midnight, please, because it's just going to get worse.
Yes.
After the later it gets, the worse the people are going to start acting a little bit more belligerent. Phone a friend. You can always phone a friend that you trust and say, hey, right now I feel like I'm wanting to drink. What should I do? Have your friend pick you up.
Yeah.
do something
Yeah.
else. So there are
Or
different
be the
like tips and
designated
tricks.
driver.
Oh, yeah, be the
Right? Like, okay,
exactly.
everybody, you're going to drink. However, if you've got to the vomitous stage, you're on your own. I'm not
Yes.
pouring you or dragging you out of the car, but I'll be your designated driver. And that way, people are off your back, right? And you're the driver, you're the responsible one. But there are some cases where people say, I won't have so and so to a party because they don't drink and I don't want them to be offended by other people who drink. And it's like, no, I think that's going for me, that's going too far because now you're making a such a big issue out of something that they now prefer become more self-conscious of it. So if that person can't cope with the fact it's a drinking party, don't go, right? And if they can cope with them, give them a little more credit.
Yes. It's interesting because yeah, we get a little bit more self-conscious, like, oh, I don't want them to think that they cannot drink around me. You know what? It's like it's funny because people will be like, hey, is it okay if I drink around you?
Yeah.
It's just like, well, but thank you for thinking about it, but I don't want to feel like that. Like, hey, don't
Yeah.
let me be the burden. You
Yes.
know what I mean? Do whatever you want. You're your own person. Like, so I just came back from this event. It was a women entrepreneur event, a weekend at the Pitch Club. And what's interesting is that at night, they had like a VIP, little evening get together at the hotel that we were staying at. And so we were all there, and their drink tickets were there and everything. And then some of the ladies were just kind of like, caught tell they were because they know what I do. And so they were just kind of like sipping up.
Sorry, we're losing you there a bit in the moment, darling.
On this side, but I just don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. Okay, let me see. Do you hear me now?
No, you got frozen there for a moment. So just if you could
Oh
just reiterate
no.
that some of the women, what we lost you at that bit.
Oh yeah, so some of the women were actually drinking and they felt a little self-conscious around being drinking around me because they know what I did. And so what I would do is I would just take a little stroll on the other side where I was hanging around with the other women that were not drinking in case they felt, but I didn't care. Or sometimes if they were, it's like, get over it. You'll be fine that I'm here and you're having to drink in front of me. It's just fun. It's interesting, the whole
What if you
process.
see somebody that you know is the alcoholic, not just having a drink to have fun, but you can tell that they know how to drink and they they're out of control, right?
Yeah. So if I was at a party, then they're drinking, I would first off, I wouldn't really approach them. I would just pray for them, to be honest. That's all I can do is pray because really anyone who told me, oh, you should stop, you should do that, made me want to drink a little bit more,
Right.
to be honest. I don't know why. I just did. But I think they have to go through their own journey, their own path, and discover for themselves. So for those, I like to be what's called just a guide. I cannot change you, but you can only change yourself. So I love to give like tools and tips if they want, if
Yeah.
they want, if they want. Otherwise, I won't bother them.
But I think also as a host or a hostess, if somebody is drinking out of controllably and becoming ornery with it, they have every right to say, okay, calling you
Oh
again,
yeah.
right?
Oh, when oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, absolutely. I would totally do that.
Right, yeah. I've never was the alcoholic, though I think probably at one point I could have easily gone down that road because, I'm a 70s chick and drinking was, coffee and wine or booze. What, water? You want me to drink water? Forget it, right? And I drink a lot because that's what we did back then. We drank a lot, and my ex-husband and I drank a lot, and of course that made us even more volatile. Which and then of course I slowed down on the drinking because I'm at home with all the kids, and then he would come home drunk or get a DUI. And it's at what point do you have to say to yourself, hang on, I enjoy a drink when around company, but I'm going to cap it. I'm going to take responsibility and cap it at a certain thing, or I'm only going to do it with food, or I'm going to make sure I have a glass of water with every drink that I have. And go, okay, I can still drink, but not to the point where the drink now is consuming me.
Yes, I think a lot of people, they question the drink. They have to think of like, why am I wanting this drink in the first
Yeah.
place? So question the drink when you're having to drink and you're like, well, do I really even need this? And does it really align to who you want to become in the future?
Right.
And
Yeah.
if it doesn't, then don't have to, but give yourself at least 24 hours
Yeah.
for sure.
I mean, like generally a bottle of whiskey lasts me about 6 or 8 months. See, my son always gives me one for my birthday or Christmas. I think it was for my birthday, but I was waiting for Christmas. But normally when I go to my son's, we may polish off a bottle of wine, or maybe have some scotch, and then I go to out with my daughter. She's a mixologist, so she, she's always, we're drinking, and I know I'm going to be drinking at those periods, but then I also know I'll come home and I won't drink, and so it's okay. I think it's down to, as you said, why are we? Is it escape? Is it to, I mean, sometimes you've just had a day and it takes the edge off. Fine, one drink, take the edge off, calm you down. Is there something else you could be doing that's better than that? And can you stop at the one drink? Or is it, oh no, I just need another and I need another? And when you get there, you've got to recognize you've got a problem.
Exactly. And that's something I wish I knew. I'm like, here I was thinking, oh, I just have a high tolerance. I can take, and plus, my ex-husband was an enabler. So if I said, oh, go get me this, he would get it for me.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, it was very challenging at the
Yes.
time.
Your journey with your children, especially with your 15-year-old, he's seen you go for all of this, right? And you've had, you know, another child, and you're with somebody with another child, and so obviously it's been an up and down life that he's been a part of. But does he see you now with all that you've gone through? Has he registered that yet? Because as a 15-year-old who's now about to go into the world of let's drink and party, you know, does he have you and what you do at the back of his mind to be more conscious about it?
I love my son so much, and bless his heart, you know, because he's autistic, and but he knows, he feels. And to see him, I just want to cry right now because he sent me a letter. He's all to my favorite person in the world.
Oh, yeah, I know. Talk
he's
about
I just love
heartstrings.
I mean, here I can tell you my story. I can tell you all about whatever, but when it comes to the children, they really touched my heart. And he's all to my favorite person. I just want to tell you how proud I am of you. And I'm just like, oh my
It's all worth it. Yeah, just that.
gosh.
It's all worth it. Yeah. And you know, the thing about autistic children, and I've interviewed quite a few of them and a lot of parents of them, you know, people look at them as having kind of difficulties and challenges. And I said, no, they have selection, right? You know, and they're very selective of who's around them, what they're going to focus on, where they're going to put their energy. And if that energy doesn't serve them, if those people don't serve them, if that environment doesn't serve them, then they're going to let you know. I think there's a lot that we can learn from them about being selective.
Yes, that's oh I, yeah, he is just that too. It's it, and he's so sweet. He's such a good boy. Like I'm so grateful I have him because he's teaching me stuff.
Yes, that's how it's meant to be. We're meant to learn. You know, we're here to be the custodians and their guardians, but also here to learn from them. Because I mean, I have two grandchildren, 6 months and 2.5, and just watching them play, watching them in their own discovery, watching them be goofy and try things out, you know, it's liberating, right? It's liberating, and it's a wonderful reflection because they are a reflection of their environment. And so when you see them so happy, you go, oh, good. Oh, good.
Yeah, he has straight A's that he's happy.
Yeah.
And then the little ones, they're happy too. And it's just nice that we can all come together and do fun activities. Like we were just at Gilroy Gardens for my little son's birthday, who just turned 8 years old.
What birthday
And
is he? What day is he?
oh, October 8th.
I'm the sixth. Good Libra in there. Good Libra.
Oh, yay! Yes, I
Always
love
looking for the
Libra.
balance in life.
Oh, and they're amazing. I love, and so he's just so, his soul is so cute. And so we went on this little mini roller coaster, and he was like, "Oh, I don't like this." And then he was like, "Nope, not gonna go on roller coasters ever again." I said, "Okay, honey, you don't have
No, it throws our
to."
equilibrium out. We're all about balance, yes.
Yeah, it was so fun.
But you know, I think the beauty of it is, it doesn't matter how he came about or where you were at that time. It's like where you are now. You know, people think that our tumultuous time around our kids, that we've damaged our kids, you know, forever. But no, when the kids see you heal, rise up and become that more divine energy, what it does is show them that no matter how difficult things are, we can rise up and be better human beings because of it. And so I think it's a lesson for them to go, no matter how difficult life can be, I can find a way to rise up and be. So sometimes, as long as they're being observant and you're also allowing them to go through their own things, and always a reminder, look at mummy. Mummy went through this tumultuous way. I lost my way. I fell on my backside many times, but guess what? I got back up. And every time I got back up, I went a little higher and a little higher. You too can do that. And I think that is a wonderful example for children.
I love what you just said. Yes, that's beautiful. And it's so true. Yes, they really, I noticed my son is, he does look at, he's looking at, he's taking a look at my journey and he just sees me now and he's just like amazed. He's like, wow, mom, because he remembers, they
Yes.
remember at a
Oh,
young age. At least
yes.
I remembered my
Yes.
childhood, unfortunately, but
Yeah,
I
exactly.
remember.
Yeah, and you know, we also sell our children short a lot, thinking that they, you know, they don't see these things, or we're hiding things from them. And it's like, you've got to be kidding. They
I
see
know.
everything, but the fact that you're hiding it, are not owning it or not speaking about it. They think it's something evil or wrong, or that they may have caused it. So I think actually coming to our children and saying, I'm going through something hard. I'm struggling through something right now. It A gives them an invitation. Can I help? And sometimes it's simply their love, right? Or they're getting you slippers, or they're doing something silly for you. But it does help you, and it helps them to believe that they are helping you. So I think closing our children out and going, no, everything's all right, while on the other side of the door you're going, obviously within the realms of their understanding, right? But it's allow our children to be there for us as well, because that empowers them and that teaches them compassion, right? And that goes an awful long way. God, do we need more of that in this world, right?
Yes, I believe that's so true. Yes, we do. And what's reminding me of another story about my little son. Because I like coloring on those coloring books that like fractal patterns, and I take coloring pencils and I draw. It's just very therapeutic for me. And then I guess he saw the coloring book and was just like, scribble. And so what I did is like, okay, well, let's just rip it out. This will be our mommy's and son's art project. And we put it on the refrigerator. This is our masterpiece right here. So it's little things like that. They love those things. Instead of getting mad, oh, why did you color in it? Just turn it around, make it. And I was fine with him coloring it anyway. I'd rather have him happy.
It's their expression. And when we do snap and get angry, what are we doing? We're not coming from the inside out. We're going from that outside in. It's not perfect. You didn't do it right. So we're coming from exterior judgment, right? Not an interior accepting of one another. So we've got to look at it. Why am I mad? Right? Because he colored outside of the lines. Hell, what lines? I don't need any lines. Let's all color outside the lines.
Yes, why rules,
Yeah, exactly. I think that had you been able to talk about what happened to you when you were young, had you had that door been open to where they helped you heal, you wouldn't have gone down the road you did. But on the other hand, going down this road, and not that doesn't mean that everybody has to go down such an extreme rocky road to get where they are today. We're all going to have potholes. What we're trying to do is prevent you having Grand Canyons, right? So, where you are today and whom you're helping today, it comes from that I relate, I've been there. This is what I did. That doesn't mean you have to do it, right? But I just want to show you it can be done. And I'm here for you on that journey. So if somebody is struggling right now, they're sober enough to know they're a drunk, right? That's the point. And they go, I don't want to be this anymore. I know that Christmas is coming up and that's a great excuse to drink. I don't want to be there. How do they reach you? What is the system that you take them through?
Oh yeah. So I'm always open for nice phone calls, not phone calls, but Zoom calls. If you want to just to get to know me, I have a, it's free, of course. And just so I can see where you're at. I like to meet you where you're at first. I like to know what you've tried in the past, what has worked, what hasn't worked. So we can build something for you. And so I have the Shine process. I like to focus not only on the mindset, getting the body healthier, but I really am big on the spirit.
Oh, 100%. If the spirit's not in it, baby, the mind doesn't matter. That's where
Yes, our mind. Oh, because it's
the chatter is. Let the
they always
spirit
say,
be the guide. Yes.
yeah, because they say what the mind is a great servant, a horrible master.
Yes, exactly. And it's a great servant when the spirit and the soul, heart, and spirit is the guiding compass, right? Because then it will give you what the mind needs to know, when it needs to know, that's been productive for you and not detriment. Yes. So really, I'm glad that you bring that into it. So you meet them where they're at. You find out what they've done. Of course, we say you can take a horse to water, you can't make it drink, but I always say leave it there long enough and it's going to realize it's thirsty, right? So sometimes you may just have that call. They hear you, they've spoken to you, but they're not quite ready. But what you've done is you've presented the water, and when they're ready, they can come back and partake of
Yeah,
a drink, right?
absolutely. Yes, they have to be ready for themselves, and they'll know. They'll
Yes,
know when it's
yes.
time.
Everybody I've ever interviewed that's had any form of addiction whatsoever, they said they all had that particular breaking point. That one point where they looked at themselves and thought, what the hell are you doing? You can't carry on. And then it was, I've got to turn this around. Whatever the addiction was, whether it was drug, alcohol, violence, business, it's whatever the addiction, when anything consumes your life to a point that you're no longer in control of your choices, then you know you have an addiction, right?
Yes.
And it's, catch it in time if you can. But even if you have fallen a few times and you're crawling to get back on your knees, you can get back up. That's the important
Absolutely.
thing. So if people are needing to get hold of you and just want to have that conversation, love, where do they reach out to you?
Oh yeah. So GinaKanarian.com, that is my full name.com.
You're gonna have to
And
spell
then
that, please, love.
oh yes, absolutely. It's GinaKanarian. at dot com. And then you can find me on Instagram at shine SHINE underscore Gina Kunarian. And just Google me and I'm there.
And your
I'm open.
podcast?
Oh yeah, my podcast is called Shine Within.
Mm.
Because we all are shining within. It's just waiting to come out.
Yeah, just a little polish, spit the polish and let it come out. Exactly.
Right. And I do have a listener's gift for your audience
Mm-hmm.
too. I have what's a blueprint. It's a six-step blueprint to living alcohol free, and it is my gift to your audience.
Wonderful. And they can also reach you at Gina at Gina Canadigan. I just thinking, I'm a Canadian, so I've just got to change the front bit of it.
Hey, people have called me Gina Canadian before too,
I can
so.
imagine, yes. But reach out, have that conversation. And quite honestly, you may actually not be the person dealing with alcohol, but you have a spouse or a daughter or a son or something that's going through it, and you want advice on what can I do? How can I help this person? How can I put them in the right direction to come and speak to you? Because it's something that can be very, very helpless for a loved one, just to watch people go through this and know, and the other person's still in denial. And it's, yes, they've got to get there, but maybe we can help them get there a little faster, at least to know what isn't aggravating them that you're doing, but something that more inspires them to want to do something.
Absolutely. I love that.
We know we can have a great life without alcohol, folks, right? And the most important thing about life is not the exterior expectation, not what happens to us, but whom we become because of our life experiences, who we are from the inside out. And the moment that you ignite with love, that love, and allow it to run through your veins, through every particle of your body, you become that love. And that love exudes from you and it cup runneth over. And your clarity and your being and everything that you're here for is shown to you. And you've just got to participate, right? It's there knocking on your heart's door. Let me out.
Yes, let me out. I'm here to love. I'm
I'm here
ready.
to love. Because, it's corny and the Hallmark movies galore on love, and the thing is, yes, we all want a love of a partner of some kind, but it's not the partner. Nobody's there to complete you, right? We want people in our life that complement us. Friends, business people, partners, we want to complement each other. We want to enhance each other. We want to be there and support one another. And when it comes from a real loving place without control or conditions, then it allows it to be that light that it is, and it will shine bright.
Oh, I love that. That's why I love you and your show. You're so, I'm like, oh, every time I hear from your voice, I'm like, oh. I love
Thank you. The reason why I do it is, because if it just gives somebody
Right.
something to pivot their life, something to be an answer they were looking for, an awareness, of what we can do differently. We are all meant to be beautiful, shining lights, and we all can be. It is a choice. And once you've chosen to, then it's like, I want to be. Now, how and who can help me on my way? And this is what my shows are all about. Here is an entire encyclopedia of people that can help you on your journey. All you have to do is listen, learn, and apply, which means reach out to them. because you've heard them, you've related to them, you know that they know what you're going through, and they wanted help. So reach out to Gina. She wants to help. Listen to her podcast. Get to know her through her podcast, right? Build up your own trust of, can I trust this woman with my vulnerability? And then take the action and reach out. Because stop selling yourself short. Stop hiding. We need you in the world. We need you in your self-love, right? We need more love in the world. So start loving yourself, right?
Yeah, that's where it starts. Yeah.
Any last words for us, Gina?
You know, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. What an honor it is to be on your show. I get inspired by just listening
Thank you.
all the time. And just, you know, for your listeners, you know, one day at a time. One day at a time. Yeah, that's all. One day at
Good
a time.
advice. One step at a time, one day at a time. You know, just on that note, I used to be the hare, right? Have an idea, I want to get to this finish line, let's do it. I've become the tortoise, and I realize I gain so much more. I gain wisdom, I gain answers, I gain people, I gain purpose by slowing down and being more deliberate, right?
Absolutely,
So, one day at
yes.
a time, one step at a time, I promise you, you'll get wherever you're needing to go.
Yes.
On that note, folks, we wish you all well. We know that temptation is there. We know escapism is easy, but ultimately there is a price to pay. So let's stop paying that price. Let's put that investment back in yourself and step into some self-love and be the healer that you need. And Gina is here for you. So until next time, folks, bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show. There are so many more for you here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. Just go to the podcast tag at the top there and you will see all the many genres and all 3,000 shows ready for your listening. We are here to serve you, to help you on your journey of life. And we know that through inspiration, it begets invitation. We are supported by you, the listeners, and those that we interview. Anything that you can spare us in donation would be greatly accepted. And we do hope that you enjoy the next show.